Well, thank you everyone for being here. I'm sorry Ron Mandersha could not join us. He always sets the bar really high, though. He's very well known and a wonderful mentor to me. So it's actually an honor for him to ask me to be here and present for him. I'm Katie Best, the Senior Research and Policy Associate for NACBID. NACBID promotes national policies and supports the critical role that counties play in caring for people affected by mental illness, addiction, and developmental disabilities. So I'm going to talk a little bit today about the impact of heart disease with individuals with mental illness, looking at a study that Ron Mandersha did in 2006, but also talk about some national initiatives that are taking place currently and some ways that you can get involved. So the concept has changed. We no longer believe that health and disease are at two ends of the same dimension, but rather it's more of a wellness model approach. So for example, I know that this isn't the best picture, but what I really want to say is we need to work on health at every level of fitness, of illness, excuse me. So not only do we have the biopsychosocial interventions, but we also need to work on a person's wellness, which is like there's like traditional biopsychosocial interventions and improved self-help and lifestyle changes. So wellness is one's outlook, social supports, and self-care activities. So we're not just working on, it's more of a prevention and promotion model that we're not just working on the illness piece, but we're also working on wellness activities. So here's the same model. This is a little bit different, but it says health and well-being demand attention to both dimensions. Mental health consumers are not only ill, but they also lack wellness. They lack hope. So two separate paths are required to address the two dimensions. One addresses the physical health, one the wellness problems. And the goal is to move them upstream into the left quadrant, which is recovery and health. So the Health and Human Services understands wellness, and they've taken a few different initiatives that I will actually talk in more detail. Healthy People 2020 is based on this framework. It is a science-based 10-year national measurable objectives for improving the health of all Americans. Healthy People strives to identify national health improvement priorities, increase awareness and understanding of social determinants of health, and provide measurable objectives and goals that are applicable at the national, state, and community levels. So through Healthy People 2020, there are leading health indicators. There's 12 leading health indicators, and they're high priority topic areas that are in the Healthy People 2020 framework. They communicate actions that can be taken to address them. They are used to address to assess the health of the nation over the decade, facilitate collaboration across sectors, and motivate action at the national, state, and local level. And I will talk a little bit more about that. CDC has developed a strategic plan to engage in population intervention and increase positive mental health. And positive mental health can be defined as your own view of your well-being, and having positive mental health helps you move up to the continuum into the left quadrant. CDC has taken a focus on well-being and health-related quality of life as a national health standard and is included as a foundation health measure in the Healthy People 2020 initiative. The initiative bridges boundaries between disciplines and between social, mental, and medical services, looking at well-being, one's own assessment of self, and health-related quality of life measures, which are health outcome measures that look at daily function, social activity, cognition, emotion, health perception, and general life satisfaction. So Healthy People 2020 does a lot of different webinars. For more information, you can go to their website. But for example, one thing that I wanted to mention is like on Wednesday, November 7th at 12 p.m. Eastern Time, they are hosting a webinar on using Healthy People to achieve your goals, implementation, action, and new tools. So it's going to highlight ways that you can use Healthy People 2020 to identify proven strategies and lessons learned, provide action steps for stakeholders, groups, and showcase examples of implementation efforts. And there's more webinars coming out, so that's just one that I can think of. The American Journal for Public Health published the first article by CDC staff on the impact of positive mental health on one's health status. And HHS has issued a national prevention strategy. The Obama administration released the National Prevention Strategy, which looks at, it's a strategic plan that focuses on prevention and well-being and stays away from looking at sickness and health. And the Affordable Care Act endorses everything that's listed above. So why do we care? Because it's costing us lots of money currently. Today, the out-year cost of Medicare, the out-year cost is approximately $27 trillion. And Social Security is approximately $17 trillion. This shows that we've spent approximately $38 trillion on elderly as an out-year cost. Chronic disease now consumes 75% of every health dollar, more than $2.2 trillion per year. So with an rapidly aging population, 65 and over, we are moving from 12% now to 18% by 2030. So we are never going to get ahead of this problem, staying the way we're working. We must move upstream to delay and prevent the onset of chronic disease. And the new wellness models that I showed above are ways that we can do that. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about Ron's study. So the problem of heart disease in persons with behavioral health conditions. So Ron Manderscheid and Craig Golden did a study in 2006 on congruencies and increased mortality rates, years of potential life loss, and causes of death among public mental health clients in 8 different states. So they found, and I have some graphs that I'm going to show you, but they found that public mental health clients die approximately 25 years younger than other Americans. And this is an increase because in 1986, the situation was much worse when disparities were estimated to be around 10 to 15 years. So from the study, the mean number of years lost per deceased mental health client varies, but is consistent between 20 to 30 years. The reason that Virginia data, as you can see at the bottom, is much lower is because the data they included only included deaths reported by clients in state psychiatric hospitals. But for Arizona, Missouri, Oklahoma, Rhode Island, Texas, and Utah, that's the public mental health system. And the years were between 97 and 2000. And this information is available online, too. So this is Missouri. I was just going to show you one graph, and this is the graph of Missouri, which reflects the leading causes of general death nationwide, which is shown in the first column on the left. That's USA All in 1999. And then we have Missouri All for 1997, and then the mental health population in 97, and then we have the same for 98 and 2000. So what it really shows is that mental health population die at the same health conditions as the general population, but they're dying approximately 25 years earlier. And there's little difference, as you can see, there's little difference between health disparities such as heart disease, diabetes, cancer, but the one that there's higher rates for suicide, as you can see in the mental health population. So moving beyond the data, an estimated 60-80% of these deaths are due to treatable chronic diseases, 68-80%. So what are some of the root causes? We've known for some time that persons with mental health conditions are at high risk of heart disease, specifically depression, which increases blood cortisol and increases heart attack. Smoking is a potent risk factor and is very prevalent among those with behavioral health conditions. So then we have the use of psychotropic medications frequently leads to metabolic syndrome and obesity, which increases risk, and excessive use of alcohol can exacerbate high blood pressure and trigger a stroke or heart attack. So all these issues listed above are associated with heart disease and heart attack that can make someone at high risk, and then we have the loss hope, so lifestyle changes. So here are some new initiatives that are taking place. The Million Hearts Initiative, I'm going to talk about a little bit more in the next slide, but they are looking at saving 1 million lives in 5 years, which is through HHS. The CDC Positive Mental Health Initiative is kind of talking a little bit about what I mentioned before. It leads to improved sense of well-being, in turn has beneficial effects on health and longevity. This falls back on some of the work that are currently doing on measuring well-being and health-related quality of life. And then the SAMHSA Wellness Initiative aims to inspire individuals to improve physical health behavior while exploring their talents, interests, social connections, and environment to incorporate other dimensions in wellness. So the 8 dimensions of wellness is a tool to encourage others to incorporate the wellness in their life, and it includes dimensions such as emotional, environmental, financial, intellectual, occupational, social, and spiritual. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about the Million Hearts Initiative. 616,000 Americans are dying each year as a result of heart disease. More than 80 million people over the next 5 years, over the next 5 years, more than 3 million of these Americans will die from heart-related elements, including heart attack and stroke. So what they're doing is they're putting this initiative in place that's called the ABCs. Over the next 5 years, by implementing appropriate aspirin therapy, so there's A, blood pressure control, cholesterol management, and smoking cessation. So this is one way that they're working on it. One thing, I'm going to go through this real quick. This is an interesting study, and I would encourage you to look it up. It was just done this month, which is really interesting. A report came out with evidence that showed people with schizophrenia are likely to die of a heart attack more than the general population. And it says right here, despite the increase in mortality risk after a heart attack, patients are half as likely to receive life-saving cardiac procedures and care from cardiologists than those with schizophrenia. So this is very, very serious. Very famous Ron slide to add in there. So what can we do about this? Well, some things that are happening are the development of health homes, integrated care. Health homes are designed to be patient-centered systems of care that facilitate access to and coordination of a full array of primary care services with behavioral health services and long-term community and supports. And this is being done in two ways. We have the behavioral health home, which brings primary care into a behavioral health care setting to provide a full array of services. And then we have the primary care, which brings behavioral health care into a primary care setting to provide a full array of services. So it's different coordinated care at same or different sites. The Carter Summit met in 2009, and it was pretty much discussing this, to bring providers and policymakers from the behavioral health, primary care, and prevention and promotion field to hold a 2-day event looking at the opportunities and challenges of patient-centered medical homes. And that's available right there if you want to get some more information. So just 2 more slides. So some of the state specifics. The weakening of the state mental health and substance use agencies, state Medicaid agencies are becoming more powerful, and states are combining agencies. For example, in California, the Department of Mental Health was eliminated altogether and moved over into the Department of Healthcare Services. The information above, such as the health homes are merging, integrated care, strengthening of state Medicaid, weakening state mental health systems are all happening at the exact same time, and we need to be prepared. So lastly, what can providers do? Always assess the basics, such as body weight, body mass, blood pressure, blood sugar. A lot of these basic measurements are not always taken. Learn and exercise in a prescribing second-generation psychotropic medications. Compare the side effects with the client's history or the already at high-risk patient for heart disease. Always link a prescription second-generation psychotropic medication to a wellness model. And educate, teach your staff. There's so many websites and webinars out there to learn a little bit more about these initiatives and getting involved. So the HHS, CDC, and SAMHSA initiatives are intended to motivate action at the national, state, and local levels, as well as among individuals, families, and communities. The indicators can help us best focus our energies at home and in our communities, work sites, businesses, or states. So the goal is to live longer, better, and happier. So with that, for more information, there's the NACBID website, and we're in the process of remodeling that. So hopefully by the end of the year, the site will be even easier to maneuver around, but there's a lot of great information around there. Ron Manderscheid goes all over and talks about healthcare reform, so a lot of information. So there's his contact information. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions, and if I don't know the answer, I will get your business card, and I'd be happy to go back and get that information to you as soon as possible. And you can also contact Ron personally. Thank you very much.